Melanated family, how's everybody doing, man? This is your brother Harrison back for a brand new episode of the Melanated Convo podcast. And I'm excited today, family. You know what I mean? I'm always excited when I can bring some of our sisters from the community on the platform to kind of speak truth to power. You know what I mean? So on today's show, I have a sister who is an author. She is a wellness leader. She is a wellness leader in our community. For over the past 20 years, her commitment to edutainment serves as a culturally responsive and highly engaging approach to inspire personal, professional, and institutional transformation. She's the founder of Marie Works Productions, a multimedia arts and education organization. Her mission is to boost self-awareness and restorative practices with the emphasis on mental health and emotional hygiene. And the crazy thing is, normally I don't read people's bio or information I get from them like that, but that was so on point that I had to read it word for word. You feel me? So everybody, please welcome on the Melanated Convo podcast our sister, Miss Mariana. How you doing today, sis?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing good. So like I said, it's just a joy to have you on the show and just explore, you know, how you got to where you are with Because you're very enlightening and informative to our people, and I think that's important. You know what I mean?
Yes, indeed. Well, I'm glad to be here to share your space with you. Mm-hmm. And you know, thank you for creating the platform. We need as much as possible. It's a lot of negativity out there, so anything that is rooted in positivity and wellness is, you know, my passion and work. Whether that's mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical, I'm all for it. So thank you for having me.
Definitely. Now, so we'll get into the great work that you do and you know, how you inspire our community. But how did all this start for you? Like, talk me through your journey of getting to a space where, yeah, I may feel a way about how my community is treated or how people are treated, how people treat themselves, but getting to the point where you want to actually help and lend yourself to the cause. That's a completely different space. You know what I mean? So how'd you get there?
I lost my mind. I mean, I think it's our dear brother ancestor Baldwin that said, you know, to be Black in America is to be in a constant rage, something to that extent, right? Mm-hmm. And I've had life experiences just like anyone else, and I think that's really important. I have an emphasis on making sure to share the duality of myself. I think sometimes when we get into working in wellness and positivity, you know, it can get kind of performative and people will allude to like, oh, it's all good all the time. No, I have had my fair share of trauma like anyone else. And it came to a point of some family issues that some years back really, really broke me down. And, you know, I've experienced, you know, hardships like any other Black folks in America, but that particular one was the one that my resilience was not kicking in the way it customarily does for us as strong people. And so that had me sit down, and I was already active as a performing artist. I was already active in leadership and community work, but I had to sit down, and I had to sit down for a good year and a half. And in that year and a half, I wasn't really finding, you know, traditional therapists to be effective in the experiences that I have. They just wasn't hitting it right. Mm-hmm. And so I, like most people in us, our awareness and our enlightenment work, I just started going on a self-healing journey, and I started exploring as many modalities and, you know, perspective shifts and information and activities that could help me to recalibrate mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and physically. Mm-hmm. And that entailed just a huge rites of passage. And what I realized is I had to own my shit. And what that did is once I was able to reground myself and empower myself and get into divine alignment the way I know the Most High created me to operate, I then took that journey and created it into a workbook. And so with that workbook, I started getting really heavily involved in getting certifications in trauma-informed care and family and community engagement, and just adding that to what was already a nice, you know, lengthy herstory of working in community. And then I just busted out and I said, I'm going to give to what I gave to myself to community I had a lot of naysayers and people who do it the traditional way, who was kind of like trying to put their fear on me because they, you know, they thought I was trying to play therapist. And it's like, no, I'm a coach. I don't need anybody's permission to be a coach, to be a wellness coach. And then through time, that started to really refine itself and grow legs. And I, you know, I'm in a marathon with it now. So for, you know, almost 7 years, I did coaching, and I'm transitioning out of coaching now. And that brings me to full circle with the answer to your question, is transitioning from coaching to now facilitating keynotes, workshops, and training facilitations for, you know, organizations, college institutions, school spaces, and even foundations and nonprofits who see the value of doing this work in an intense way, but also in a fun and nurturing way as well.
Wow. Wow. So that's always inspiring to me. That's the, one of the biggest pleasures I get from doing this show is speaking to people who've, like we all should try to do, use their personal circumstances, use like the things that have happened to them and the things they've been to or been through rather, to just create a better lane for themselves, like a better perspective for themselves. It seems like that's the hardest thing for us to get over. Black folks in particular, Miss Mariana, but it seems like just people in general, it seems like people have a difficult time owning their own shit. You know what I mean? That's why I like the title of your workbook, because it seems like a something that will be a little easier to do because you are dealing with yourself every day, but on a larger scale, people have a really difficult time like being accountable. What do you think that comes from? Because after what you just explained to me that you did, I've seen a lot of people do that. After you can own everything you've been through and kind of create a template to work through from that, you can then begin to help others. But how do you get to the point to help yourself first? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the reason why accountability is so difficult, because it's cousins with guilt and shame. Right. And so when we don't want to be embarrassed, when we don't want to harbor feelings of guilt and shame, it's a lot easier to deflect away from it and maybe focus on what everybody else should have, could have, would have been doing. Meanwhile, we're filing apart behind the scenes. And so, you know, a big passion for me, I work with all community members, but I have a special care for artists, you know, entertainers, people in leadership and activism, those who are entrepreneurs in business, because oftentimes, especially in our community, we are gifted, you know, what through inherent birthright, we are here with a certain amount of gifts. And a lot of us, because of the resilience of surviving the atrocities that Black people have gone through on this planet Earth, those skills are prominent. But we get such an emphasis on that skill set that we want to put that talent out. We want to put that gift out. We want to put those services and goods out. And what I try to emphasize on people, the reason why it's so important to take accountability is because if you can give birth to such great, you know, creations and inventions and entertainment and art when you're in pain, what can you do? If you sit that ass down and do some, give yourself a year process of not trying to lead and perform and be put on. What can you produce and what can you become without that trauma active all the time? I mean, not that we're healed overnight and it's all gone. It's a lifelong process, because as we overcome trauma, there might be different incidences that happen throughout life. But if you cleaned up at least 60 to 70% of that, how much more capacity would have? How much more resilience would we have? How much more would we be able to produce and create and ultimately be able to unify with each other? Because when we're afflicted internally with our own stuff, it's hard for us to unify, which is the big thing that we want to cheerlead for. So, you know, to really hone in on the answer to your question, is accountability is often difficult because of the guilt, the shame, the embarrassment, and the self-loathing that we'd rather paint over that with our wonderful gifts and talents. But the sacrifice is, and we've seen this with some of our most amazing leaders through human time, some of our amazing movements, they crumble and fall apart, right? Because we don't own up. So some of them bad habits, some of them issues, they will seep out And then they will overshadow all of the good work and possibly have us and our movement self-destruct. So the reason why I really want to carve out, you know, learning and exploration opportunities for folks to take accountability is because I know how to do it in a fun, nurturing, and exciting way. But I also help people with that coaching mentality to like, look, yo, if you clean this up, right? The ability for you to go far and be more effective with your own personal life, health, and prosperity, and then in leadership for others. Even if you're not a community leader or entrepreneur, entertainer, you might be the leader of your household, of your siblings, of your spouse, of your home. That helps you to be more healthy, whole, and complete in that leadership position.
Definitely, definitely. And that's, wow, very interesting perspective, because while you were talking, I was thinking, I've heard so many stories about Black greatness that came out of trauma. So much so, damn, it's funny you say that. So much so, I almost expect it in the story now that a piece of them getting to that piece of greatness was the trauma or something that happened with their mom or their dad or drugs. And we'll joke about they made their best music or their best art while they was, you know, Mary J. Blige made her best music when she was going through trauma. Right. And this is a fact and shit that we say. But in actuality, what if she was happy? That's a great point, sis.
Right. Well, you know, let's dive deeper into that, because I do believe that this planet Earth is a healing planet. Right. Mm-hmm. I do believe that when we incarnate ourselves and select our little parents, no matter how perfect or raggedy or both they are, right, we come here to have specific experiences. And that includes going through a healing process. I've said it myself, as an MC, as a poet, as an actress, as a playwright, all of those things, I've definitely created out of pain. My favorite jazz singer is Billie Holiday, and all she'll tell you about her man did her dirty and tell him to come right home, right? Like, so I do understand that dynamic, because pain has this catapulting energy that can pull us back and have us push ourselves forward out of that situation. But this is the fine line. And this is why I took a pause for almost 10 years of not doing any poetry, because I started noticing that if we're not careful, especially those who are gifted as melanated people, we will begin to exploit our pain. And that is when our healing experience on the planet can suspend our growth in human development. Yes, we come here to experience healing, to overcome, to excel. But if we stunt our growth because we then just only know how to perform and chuck and jive, that we'll end up cooning and making ourselves look a fool in the midst of, you ever been around a young person? Do you have any young children in your life?
I sure do.
Okay. So, you know, when they make a funny and then everybody cracks up, right? Mm-hmm. And then they do it over. I mean, you're like, baby, it was good that one time. You don't need to wear it out. It ain't funny no more. Right. And I think that's what happens, whether that's us being athletes and running the ball, whether that's being entertainers, whether that's being entrepreneurs, where at some point, maybe we hit a level of success, recognition, usually that's, the money, the bag, and we get stuck in doing that over and over, and we don't evolve beyond that. So I don't shun or condemn anybody that finds inspiration in overcoming their trauma. That's the beauty of victory. But I do think as Black people, we need to be careful, because there are institutions who love pimping and exploiting our pain to where that is how far we will go if we don't evolve beyond that. What's your feedback on that?
No, that makes a lot of sense. And that kind of, to me, speaks to the rationale of some of the individuals in our community who we may call a coon, right? Who we may see go left and pretty much stay over there.
Right.
They may have got the impression that I got to stay over here. Like this is the lane I have to be in to get said thing. And maybe they've experienced trying to do it a different way. Right. Trying to do it from a different lens. And, you know, if that's not working, they tend to stay over there. And then we shun them when in actuality, they just that little kid that doing the same thing over and over again, expecting to get a laugh.
Right. And that's where we can slide in that very common phrase, when you know better, you do better. So also too, not to guilt and shame people who maybe didn't know any better, right? For that brother that was slanging on the block to provide for his family, that was a reality at some point in time. He might have had some bars and was able to, evolve with that particular craft. But what happens, and this is why we have to be careful of who we sell our art to, better yet, who we contract our art and our creativity, our innovations to, because that's when these institutions will come in and then they will contract you. So what happens, and I have worked with brilliant people who are celebrities, artists, politicians behind the scenes. I ain't gonna say no names because that ain't none of y'all business. But what happens is when they were in that young-minded disposition with that talent, maybe gullible, maybe in a space of poverty, right? They're doing all they can to get put on. I've heard people say, I'll do anything to be famous, right? Mm-hmm. They get in there and maybe they are innocent. But what happens is when you begin to contract yourself, right? We've gone from overseers to policy owners, right? They will then, it's new millennium, slavery, arts, entertainment, athleticism, and things like that. What happens is they get stuck and bound to that role because of their policy owners. So even if they are evolving, we will never know. And that's when you start to see some of the most prominent and impactful, beautiful, talented people start falling apart. And we judging them from the outside. A lot of the time, we have no idea that they do want to evolve, but their overseer, their policy owner will ruin them if they decide, that they want to start speaking truth, or they don't want to shuck and jive the way they were contracted to when at one point in their younger years or less evolved years, that was enough.
Mm-hmm. And damn, when you say that, I think of like the Michael Jacksons of the world, the Princes of the world, people who was in it for the art. And it seems like once the politics and the corporations get involved, the institutions, it takes a lot of the love out of it. I've heard people say, if you want to love what you do, like art or something, create, or something creative, don't sell it. Once you start selling it and make it a commodity, then you got to get in bed with these other individuals and it can completely take like the fun out of it for you. So that makes a lot of sense. You know what I mean? Yeah. So one thing I wanted to ask you real quick. So Own Your Own Shit, which is an acronym, right? For Some Healing In There. I didn't know that. I had to look that up.
That's Own Your Shit.
Now answer this. Because I've seen books written in like workbook form, right? And my first reaction years ago when I first started reading, I was like, I don't want this shit. Like, I don't want a no workbook. I just want to read. You know what I mean? But then I was watching an interview you did where you said, when people are looking to heal from something, right? When people are looking to heal from something, when they're looking to address something going on in their life immediately, maybe they don't want to read 300 pages. Maybe they don't want to read a book that's this thick. But putting it in a workbook form, then you got to actually do the work. So I thought that was a creative way to, you can read a little bit, but then you're actually working on what your problem is. So give me your idea behind writing the book in that format.
I didn't want to read a million pages when I was in pain. Can you imagine? Okay, so look, if you bust your head open to the white meat, right? And you have to get rushed to a facility, an emergency room, right? Mm-hmm. Even filling out and giving your basic information to check yourself in is agonizing, right? Yes. So my disposition on this is when people, usually when we have a physical ailment or an emergency, we'll get rushed to the emergency room, right? Mm-hmm. But when our minds get broken, we don't get rushed anywhere. When our hearts get broken, we don't get rushed anywhere. When our spirits get broken, we don't get rushed anywhere. So if you are a person that does pick up my workbook and you decide to own your shit, I'm not trying to make that check-in process long. Even my introduction about me is only, I think, 7 or 8 pages, because this ain't about me. I'm going to use myself as an example and be transparent, but I'm trying to get you after that first 10, 11, 12 pages. I'm trying to get you active, doing those charts, doing those graphs, doing those reflections. Because some people, journaling is big, and I love to recommend that to people that I work with. But sometimes folks will go to that dollar store and get that journal. They'll sit down, they'll burn their little candle and their sage, and then they just staring at the book because they don't have any prompts. So the thing about the workbook that I developed is it is full of the literal prompts that I put myself through to deeply reflect who, what, when, where, why. How did this happen? How is it impacting me? How does it show up in my little triggers? Some people like to say, well, I don't have triggers. It might be called a pet peeve, right? Whatever it is. And so a lot of that diving in, and I'm not the only one with a workbook. There's workbooks out there all over the place. Mm. At the end of the day, there's a million singers, but you have a preference of certain singers that you like. So for those of you who get into the Own Your Shit workbook, it is in the same tone that I'm talking to you right now. You'll feel like Auntie is in the room with you, guiding you through. And that tends to be the flavor that our people want. They don't always want the clinical route. They want a down to earth route because they have a lot of systemic and institutional distrust for organizations that have historically harmed us when we do try to seek out help and they want to experiment on us. So that was the logic to the workbook. Don't nobody got a lot of time to read a whole bunch. When people are hurting, they want to get the ailments relieved. Once they get at least the basic relief and acknowledgement and the healing that they need in that moment, then you can take them on a journey that's a little bit more extensive and in depth.
Makes a lot of sense, because I'm very aware of like the systemic pressure in injustices that we face in our country, and we still face them. You know what I mean? And I make it a point to speak on these things and speak truth to power when it comes to how we're being treated and not be afraid of whatever comes after that. Right. But yes. I think what I'm learning is as big as us understanding history and understanding that perspective so we can understand how to move forward. I'm really big on that. But as I grow, Mariana, I'm learning, well, we need to take a step back first and look at how all this stuff affected us without looking at the accusers or someone who could have done it that's outside of our community. Just take a step back and look at, well, wait a minute. My mom was on drugs. My daddy wasn't there. My sisters and brothers was doing this and doing that. That was a high level of dysfunction that I had to function under. I need some time maybe to unpack some of this, like to get everything right. Because if not, how can I move forward and truly help my family or truly be a member in the community that can be effective if I haven't done the work on myself, right?
I agree. I think, especially when you come into a level of knowledge of self, right? And you get the thick lining pus, you know, taken away from covering over your eyes, when you get the, you know, wool pulled from underneath your feet, the carpet, the rug, right? You mad. That's that Shango phase. You want to cut everybody up. You want to slice and take the whole world down. And that's a normal part of awakening when you realize, like Brother Malcolm said, we've been bamboozled, right? But I think the idea is to understand that if we are weak and we recognize the brilliant works of our Dr. Queen Mother DeGruy, right? Of this generational trauma, it's not going to be easy to take on a system without our internal system intact. And it could be counterintuitive for a lot of us, especially for Black women who have been the nurturers in the cradle of since the cradle of civilization, right? Mm-hmm. We have been, for our own and then also for the greater world outside, people been nursing from us, right? Our slave master's children were nursing from us because they know we had that good nutrient, right? But the idea is it can be counterintuitive for us to say, no, I will not overserve. I will not. I'm a retired overgiver and I love it. I love it. I invite everybody to become a retired overgiver, because what happens is that gave me the bandwidth to recalibrate, to nurture myself, to pour into myself, to get over those daddy issues that I had, right? With angry that my biological father wasn't in my life, to get over the issues of my mother who had been abused and didn't necessarily at certain points of life give examples to me that helped me to have a level of confidence that I needed, to get past the phase where my daughter and I, when she turned into a teenager and we both lost our minds because we didn't know how to navigate that, right? I had to take time to deal with that immediate life issues that I had before I decided I was going to go out here and heal the world. And I think that that's where a lot of the systemic breakdown happens for Black folks in leadership, in community, is that we are so quick to take care and fight the world. And then we are breaking down behind the scenes. And then our movements and our causes fall by the wayside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And because sometimes we condemn let's say a Martin Luther King or any individual that we may have found out there's something going, they had another side to them that we didn't see. Right. And then we condemn them for that and not want to still stand behind them the same way. But just like you saying, everybody has multiple sides to them. And if you focusing on changing the world, sometimes it could be difficult to change what's going on inside of you when you're getting pulled from all these different directions. Right.
You said it, you nailed it. And this is the thing. And this comes full circle of what I started this conversation with, is I'm all about celebrating and uplifting my duality, being aware of it and understanding it. I'm a little leery of folks that's positive all the time, enlightened and woke all the time. That's correcting everybody else all the time. The reality is this mouthpiece that I have, that I've been blessed with, that can pour life into any living human being that I've ever met, I can also do some damage with this. Mm-hmm. And if I have afflictions and isms and schisms and issues that are active in me, I'll more than likely, number one, I'll end up using this mouthpiece as a weapon instead of a healing tool. And number two, I will harbor secrets and things that I am deflecting from this light that I'm always trying to shine. I'll tell you right now, I have no problem naming my book Own Your Shit, because I am spiritual just as I am a sister from the hood. I can go into corporate spaces just as I am a cultural Renaissance woman, right? This duality and this idea that I have to be one or the other is it can be imprisoning. For me, it's understanding the nature of both so that I can operationalize both sides to work in unison. When they're out of balance, that's when we have, like I said, them little secrets that start morphing into habits and start morphing into things that are destructive to ourselves first. And then, of course, if we are in positions of community or leadership, there's nothing more heartbreaking than seeing our community leaders and their isms and schisms and issues come to light, and then they get torn down as if they never contributed anything good. So even when we're talking about, you mentioned Martin Luther King, but let's take it more contemporary. Let's take it to a brother like R. Kelly. There ain't no denying that he's a talented, gifted human like all of us. Mm-hmm. But in his duality, because of the trauma that he experienced at a young age, he didn't have an auntie helping him to heal. He didn't have somebody helping him to own his shit. His gift exonerated him and put him on high to where his ego could excuse it. Then he could have a whole payroll of people going along with it. And then here you go, this gifted being, because they didn't heal that trauma and get the assistance, that open mind and open heart and open spirit surgery that he needed, it morphed into something else, right? He was able to keep it a secret because of the power of his gift. But as the way karma and dharma works out, that thing started overshadowing because it got bigger than his talent and gobbled it up. And look at him now. And none of us are above that. So even those of us that's judging him because we're triggered by his particular affliction and issue, we all got something. And if we're not careful, it can swallow us up whole.
It can swallow you up whole if you're not working on it, if you're not trying to find the duality in both of them. That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. Because sometimes, I think sometimes, sis, you could be someone that's impactful in such a positive way to the world or to whatever you're doing, whatever it is that you do that affect people. Sometimes you could be putting such a positive effect on them that you don't want them to see that shit, you smoke cigarettes or you do anything you think that doesn't make you that perfect person. You know what I mean?
And I don't want to be perfect. Just think about it. Think about it. When you go to the grocery store, you see all them apples and oranges lined up perfect. They ain't got no bruises. They ain't got no stretch marks. They ain't got no bumps from coming down from the tree. Some of the best, sweetest fruit in the world, if you know what I'm talking about, got bruises and stretch marks. So this idea of everything being uniformed and perfect, that perfection is more of a westernized standard, down to beauty, down to the things that we take in. Things have imbalances in them or imperfections in them, and that's what makes them unique. And so, when I'm working, especially with young children, specifically young women, I got to work on that with them, but with me too. I'm 44 years old. Things are starting to move and slide. I got laugh lines and forehead wrinkles, but there's a beauty and a maturity in that phase of life that could never be swapped out for the beauty when I was, young and fine in a certain way. It's a different kind of fine at different phases of life. That's and so this idea of perfection, that can contribute with hiding our issues, right? This is what can give us what most people call, what is it, Esther, when you self-sabotage, right? Because you're trying to be perfect. And then imposter syndrome. You're trying to be perfect. So you're getting imposter syndrome, right? And then you're self-sabotaging because you know you can't reach this perfect image you're putting out. If we truly embrace ourselves and we're open in duality about what we are gifted at, but also the areas that can be potential challenges, we can use those gifts to water and nurture those areas so we can keep them at bay. I have a temper. I got a temper. As positive as I am, as much social wellness, emotional, if I don't keep my temper in check, I'll take everybody's head off. And I know that. There's a freedom in me knowing that, so I can check myself when that temper, if something bothers me, right? And, I don't want to feel this way. But if I'm denying it, if I'm not aware that I can have a temper, which I inherited from my father, my biological father, then that thing will creep up on me and sabotage my entire life. So it's my job, right? I'm the spirit of Sekhmet. And Sekhmet, if you know anything about the Kemetic Netter Sekhmet, she's a nurturer, but she can also tear some stuff up. When they're working in balance, she's a whole being, right? This deity, this concept is a whole being. But when they're out of balance, oh Lord, she can be a whole lot of hurt for everybody.
Makes a lot of sense. And something else I want to touch on. You just mentioned young women a few minutes ago, and it made me think about, there was a video I seen you do. I'm not sure if it was young men or young women you were speaking to, but you made a great point about like a respect factor. Like you made a correlation between like attention and respect as far as, I think it was young men you were speaking to. And you made a correlation between, hey, name the women you respect. Name the women you respect and you have love for. Name the women that grabs your attention the most. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Speak to me about that correlation. If, you know, if people haven't seen that video, I thought that was a very powerful approach to speaking about that topic.
Yes, indeed. Well, first props to Brother Timothy Poole, who is very active with his organization known as Hooked on Fishing, Not Violence, and it's out of Sacramento, California. And, you know, just like I had my eye on his organization, I'm like, oh, I love what he's doing. I want to tithe and offer and do some work with him at some point. So we eventually worked together, and he booked me to come work with his young men's organization, after school organization. And it was amazing because I just simply posed a question. A lot of the times when I'm working with young adults who can be resistant from, you know, OGs coming in the room, observing them and working with them, is I gauge through questions. Young people are tired of us talking at them, telling them what to do. Young people are seeking exploration experiences, which is necessary for anyone in their rites of passages at different phases of their life. So the question that I ask them is, where do you learn respect and disrespect from? Of course, when I said, well, where are you learning respect from? Most of them, the consensus in the room, moms, right? Maybe big auntie or big mama here and there, right? Well, where do you learn, you know, disrespect from? Sexy Red, Cardi B, what's the little munch one with the afro? I can't think of all the names. I try to keep up with them because they keep me abreast. But the idea is they only had one or two figures in their life that was prominent in their growth and develop in the influence over their psyche that was teaching them respect. But where they were learning disrespect, oh, that was a redundant message from a variety of people that get their attention. Now, I'll say this, some people challenge and they were like, well, you know, those are women that they're attracted to. Those, you know, they're not gonna be attracted to their mom. It don't matter who you are giving your focus and attention to, who influences the way your mind processes information is going to create a lasting impression on your human growth and development. So if you got your mom, right? And she's trying to say the same, like an old broken record over and over, right? And that's one, maybe two people with Big Mama, but you got six, seven, eight, look at the balloons. That is so funny. You got six, seven, eight, nine, 10 with a mantra in your ear saying things like, fuck them and I get some money, over and over again, right? I'm sorry, I'm assuming we can cuss on this show.
Yes, you can.
Right? It's a lyric, I'm quoting a song lyric, right? But if you have that in your psyche over and over again, what you think's gonna happen? There's gonna be a war of the mind of that young developing person who is trying to decipher, do I listen and do I follow the narrative and the guiding voice of those who are in my home taking care of me? Or do I listen and give time and energy to those who I'm lusting and seeking attention from when I'm giving all my attention to them?
Wow. That's so, speaking of like the hip hop and the influence that it has on our young people, right? Because, you know, I'm 43 years old. I love hip hop. I grew up listening to the music that it's the primary music that I still listen to today, right? But as you get older and you know better, like we were saying, you know better, you do better, you get hearing some of the messages like, damn, that sounded good, but that's just not right. Well, I find myself cutting my music down sometimes. I'm like, wait a minute, maybe that means I should be listening to this shit. But
what is this garbage? Yeah.
See, so how do we? Because when we talk about the Sexy Red, Cardi B, I don't like these. Is my sisters, right?
Yeah.
But so I try to approach it, Miss Mariana, from a perspective where I don't want to condemn them so much as just make an example out of how negative, like the effect of the imagery, right? The lyrics is one thing, but it's also the imagery.
Absolutely, absolutely. So
how do we get young people to, damn, it seems like they're under a trance almost, you know? How do we get young people to understand, like, being able to enjoy something without embodying it? You know what I mean?
Well, there's a fine line there. And I think that, you know, it's kind of like someone who's saying they're lactose intolerant and they eat it. And it's like, well, it tastes good, but you know your stomach gonna be tore up for the next 3-4 days. There is some decision-making skills that we have to equip ourselves with. So let me back it up. There were several people, that particular post with the young men went viral. There were several people that came in and majority of people were like, yes, auntie, we need this. But there, of course, are going to be those who have opposing views, right? And some of them were like, well, what's wrong with what these women are doing? Why are you condemning them? I actually never once condemned them. Mm-hmm. All we did was observe the content of what it is they are contracted to produce. So I want to be very clear, right? I want to be very clear that it is not my goal to condemn people, but I also think that when we're talking about accountability, whether you're contracted to do it or you're doing it for free 99 on OnlyFans, right? At the end of the day, what we put out is going to impact other people. So if, again, to take it back to that conversation about some of these really strong personalities or public figures get locked into being contracted into situations where at first it might be cute, right? But then they get stuck in it. I'm not going to condemn them because my critical thinking knows that half of them don't let their own kids listen to that music. Half of them don't let their own kids eat that food that they are advertising because they know it has no nutritional value mentally, emotionally, spiritually. The idea is to allow people to engage in experiences where they can do critical thinking that don't require them, that doesn't require them to judge another, but they can make divine judgment on how this is impacting me. And so that's where the conversation often goes when I'm working with young people is I'm not here to diss the people you like, because that's a quick way to turn people off. But let's observe the impact of it. If we look at, you know, sonically, what music represents and the power that it has. Let's just take away how much you like them and they fat booties, right? And their cars and their money and their popularity. Let's just look at the science of things. Because when we look at the science of things, we can get out of our feelings. If we knew that scientifically our ancestors built pyramids and the location and alignment of those pyramids, not only cosmically, but the makeup and the frequency of those pyramids were actually attuned to musical frequencies, we would understand that music has a very big impact on our psyche and development. If we knew that record companies tap and tamper with the frequencies of music to make them be more dark and make them vibrate on the level of depression and anxiety and paranoia, just like scary movies when you hear those little sounds, right? Mm. Those things are strategically designed that way. So when we get young adults to observe what this is doing without their permission, that is a beautiful entry point to getting people who may love the taste or the sound or an activity that they have yet to see how this is affecting them and infiltrating them in a way that does them harm in the long run. That is usually what opens their mind. So they don't feel like I'm attacking what they love. I'm simply informing them and enlightening them like a good documentary. You can make your decision what you're going to do with this information afterwards.
Makes a lot of sense. Now, one more thing I want to touch on about just speaking with the kids and the music and everything. So, like, you know, I've seen you speaking to the kids and being very transparent in like the level of relatability. I feel if the kids in that room had an understanding of what you were saying, like they was vibing with you based on your approach, right? And that's important. But when we talk about the music and the things that are influencing the children a particular way, I think it's really important to have that same type of setting with the parents, right? Because if the parents are allowing, because when we look at these damn phones, all of us who have children, we're allowing our children to consume certain things when it comes to technology. Shouldn't we be on the parents as well? Like, hey, you know, this is what the music is doing. Try your best to, you know, remove it from your children's presence, or at least educate them enough so they'll know what direction to go in.
Yes, yes. In the work that I do, I understand the value of not just putting the pressure on children to be responsible for their own discipline in terms of their growth and development. I also feel that, yes, parents need to, or it would behoove parents, if they actually care about their young adults and children's growth and development, to understand that if they're involving and dabbling in the same music and then the same entertainment, it's going to be hard to tell them not to do it and you're doing it too. And so a lot of the time, right, parents, I was just speaking about this the other day, people, you know, blame the parents. But then also there's a lot of parents that don't have parenting skills. So just us yelling at them and telling them that they need to stop doing what they enjoy. That's why I'm very big on family engagement experiences when I'm creating transformational exploration events and things like that. Sometimes I'm working with the kids. Sometimes I'm working with parents and community members. But I also enjoy creating events where all of us can come together and be held accountable for the particular roles that we have in those family and community dynamics. It's not enough to tell the kid to clean up and straighten up and fly right and inspire them with me and surround them in positivity and then send them home to an environment that doesn't enforce that. And it's not enough for me to just give it all to the parents, but then also not give a loving tap on the backside to these kids and say, yo, you're being disrespectful. And half of that music is instructing you to be disrespectful with parents that genuinely love you. But I also want to not exclude one very important and powerful element of our human growth and development that often gets neglected. And that is the active presence of our elders. Our elders used to be in the fold of our, those were our counselors. Those were our life coaches, right? And we have begun to, in society, to tuck them away into homes and put them away, especially Black communities. There's a disconnect. And for sometime grandma, 37, 38 years old, right?
That's a fact. Ain't no more big mamas.
Ain't no more big mamas, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not a shame and blame game, right? Because we know the reasons for the breakdown of this family structure. But as we Sankofa ourselves and we start to study and understand where are these little missing pieces, and as we start getting our internal systems in a line, our family systems in a line, and making sure that the presence of everybody in that family dynamic begins a restoration process, that is what's going to help us to align. Because it's not just the youth. It's not just the parents. Our elders have wise instruction. They might not be perfect either. None of this requires perfection. It requires us to be present. Present, willing, and able to do the communal restoration work to get ourselves functioning in our traditional greatness.
Makes a lot of sense, because for a lot of us, the main individual in the family that did the rearing or gave you those moments where you knew you had to listen, you knew you had to follow an instruction, it was always a big mama type of figure, even in the midst of a lot of dysfunction. Now, that's an important part to point out, because sometimes our moms was on drugs, the daddy wasn't there, the only stable person in the environment was big mama or was some type of maternal figure like that. And
there was respect for her.
There was respect for her, regardless of everything that was going on. You'll hear the stories of the gang members and the people from the hood that'll tell you we was out here doing all kind of shit. And once Miss Johnson walked by, we pulled our pants up. We did certain. That level of respect is gone. I see kids in the store now. It's elderly people walking by, adults walking by. They cussing, saying whatever they want to say. So it just seems like, I don't know. It's like sometimes I feel like it's getting worse. You know what I mean? Because when we were younger, it was bad. But now these kids, it's one step further. You know what I mean?
Well, that is the destruction of the honor for the divine feminine, right? When we hear songs over and over and over, right? Bitches ain't shit but hoes and tricks, right? Fuck them and I get some money. When we hear these, you know, this is part of the dark side and the exploitation of hip hop that is now starting to swallow the psyches of our minds, our hearts, and our spirits whole. Mm-hmm. And the thing about it is, African people, as people of African descent, we love a rhythm. Sometimes I'll be somewhere and it'd be a country song and I'm not listening to the lyrics of the voice. It's just the beat. There's something the way we are built and by intelligent design that beat will pull us in. So oftentimes you will find that the divine feminine has been disrespected for now, what, hip hop 50 years old. But the last 25 years, hip hop been real disrespectful to women and has exonerated that. Let's just own our shit as a hip hop community. And that destruction over and over, now you got a few generations that was born into that. You know, it's different when we were younger, right? We're in our 40s where we could hear it, but we knew better. Now you got babies being grown with lyrics that say, fuck them and I get some money. And then we wonder why these children are now self-prostituting. They don't even need nobody to turn them out. The music turns them out. It's an instruction manual, right?
Come on now.
The idea is as we start to restore our women to their traditional greatness, when we start to understand the power of divine feminine, right? Don't nobody act the fool around me. When brothers, I don't care how they act, when I walk by, there is a command because I had to begin to heal that first. I couldn't wait for some man to start respecting me first. I had to restore those parts that were broken, and it automatically commands that. There is a reverence that comes, and that was earned through me learning how to self-love and self-heal. So you will notice that depending on how you will know how a nation is doing by the maintenance and the development of the women and the children. Mm. I can tell you how a nation is doing based on how the woman is doing. She is the cradle, right? So if we are disrespecting our children, disrespecting our women, everything else on the planet is going to be disrespected as well. Once we get that reverence and that homage back for the divine feminine, the children will fall in place, the partners will fall in place, and that is when we, again, get to a different level of restoration and care.
That's a fact. And, you know, it's funny you just mentioned that because a few days ago I was telling somebody, you know, I'm looking at the overly sexualized lyrics in a lot of these females' raps. And a piece of me says, we did this. Mm-hmm. Look, we was saying bitches ain't shit but hoes and tricks. Now they saying the same thing to us, just in reverse. So we can't blame these young women when we planted the seed years ago and the beat was jamming, so we felt it was okay. Right. Now, like shit, like Malcolm said, the chicken's coming home to roost. Now,
absolutely.
One more thing I want to touch on with you, because again, I've seen a lot of your videos, and I'm like, I kind of already have in my mind.
Homework. Somebody been doing homework.
I'm like, I kind of have in my mind what I want to talk about with her. Very because good. In our community, we have these catchphrases that we love and we stick to, right? One of the latest catchphrases is stand on business, right? You're going to hear it out of anybody's mouth. So I'm standing on business. But you said something that was, to me, was damn near revolutionary because I never thought about it that way. You said stand on boundaries. Yeah. And the bigger piece is, someone will tell you to create boundaries. Hey, but draw that line in the sand so people know how to treat you. Mm-hmm. Well, what about the boundaries you put on yourself so you can know how to treat you? So touch on that for me.
Yeah. So I was working with someone the other day and that came up. That whole idea of I need to stand on business. I've been kind of slacking. Usually the person who's not standing on business is not standing on boundaries. Mm. And it's become very popular the last 5 years, right? As we're now getting into mental health work, right? You know, respect my boundaries. Don't dump on me, right? All that is popular now. But a lot of the times, the reason why somebody can overstep the boundaries that you set for them is because they watch you not respecting the boundaries that you need to keep for yourself.
Damn.
And damn. So we say things like, teach people how you want to be treated. That is often how the standard according to what we say ourselves. So if people are watching you say something, because it's the woke thing to do or the conscious and evolved thing to say, right? But your actions don't follow that. You think they respect, they're going to give you respect when you don't follow through on the self-care, on the maintenance, on the discipline of your tongue, right? Of your actions. So a lot of the times I see this happen with people of all ages, all backgrounds, is we know how to put a brick wall up, right? Oh no, that, what you're not gonna do, what's not gonna go down. But on the other side, where are the boundaries from us disrespecting ourselves and not maintaining the upkeep that we need to operate at the healthy higher good that would command folks actually regarding and seeing that boundary? Don't nobody see a boundary that you put up for them if beyond it, they can look through that fence and see, well, why do I got to respect you? You don't respect yourself. Why do I got to keep my word to you? You don't keep your word to yourself. Why do I have to follow through and be consistent for you? You don't follow through and you're not consistent for yourself. So my flip and my remix is, if you want to stand on boundaries, that is going to be the first step necessary to stand on business. When your boundaries are clear from people not being able to harm you, you not being able to harm yourself, it is much more easier to stand on business and the things that you want to achieve in life.
That makes a lot of sense. And I personally, because when you said that, I mean, that hit home for me, because I've had times in my life being a man, you know, and having children. I have 5 boys.
Lord, yes, indeed.
Oh yeah, I started early. That's another story. But I have 5 boys, and didn't have a father growing up, right? And you know, had brothers and men around me, but there was a time, Mariana, where I said, "Okay, I'm not doing this man thing right."
Okay.
Like something's not aligning. Like the and what I didn't know at the time, the respect I feel I should be getting, I don't get. Like I've watched TV and I've seen men I respect. When they say something, them kids do it. When they present an idea, everybody looks at him and says, "Okay, this is the gospel. We're gonna follow what he say." Mm. I was missing one big point though, or I was missing one big piece. I wasn't doing it to myself. And like you just said, they watching me not hold myself accountable. Mm-hmm. They watching me not do things correctly. They watching me tell myself I'm going to do something and not do it.
Yeah.
So you think we're going to listen to you? And I wasn't developed mentally enough to know that I was the problem. And I think that happens a lot in our community. Like all the stuff we have to go through, sometimes being young and starting a family and moving so fast, you don't even realize that all this stuff is going on around you. And I've seen people say, "Man, I got such the worst luck. I got the worst luck." And I'm thinking, nah, you not making good decisions.
Yeah. Cause and effect. Mm-hmm. Cause and effect. Absolutely. I will add to that little piece too. A lot of our behaviors that we don't know where we got them from came from the treatment of our oppressors. Our oppressors treated our women disrespectfully like animals and treated our men disrespectfully like animals. A lot of our parenting is very authoritative, which models after what we thought, right? Masa, our mama, daddy is our masa, right? So one thing in us transforming that is when I'm working with parents, I ask them, how much are you doing out of being angry versus how much are you doing in your parenting for their development? Mm. And sometimes when you're able to see like, ooh, that reaction, the way I'm talking to my son, I'm angry about 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 things. But because I'm the parent and I can exude this power and you can't talk back to me, that's what slave master did to a lot of us on the plantation. Yep. Right. So a lot of, you know, what we call now traditionally Karens, right? They were being beat and abused by their man. So what they do, they come and take it out on us or our frustrations. So we have to be mindful of how some of our parenting is in alignment with the perception of authoritative control and corporal punishment in the way that we're treating our children. There's a difference between nurturing and cultivating and, yes, disciplining your child to it, along with you modeling the behavior that you want to have versus do what it is I say, not is what I do. And that's don't talk back to me, I'm a parent. So you don't do A, B, and C, but I can do it because I'm grown. And what you gonna do? I'll beat you down. That's some slave master mentality. That is not parenting.
Not so somebody, yeah.
We learn that history, we'll see some of these ugly traits, and we won't act like Precious's mom and start working on owning our shit and not taking out the residual of our anger and our frustration on our babies when we have to discipline them.
That's a fact. And I had to learn a little later in life that corporal punishment isn't the best answer.
Yeah.
Right. So immediately you feel like you're getting what you want, but ultimately you're not, because you're trying to teach a lesson. There's something you want them to take from this that they can actually use, not just the fear of getting their ass whipped. Right. And then do as I say, not as I do. And we have a lot of those little things that we say like that in our community. That's bullshit.
Ain't that what slave pastor would say?
And when I got and I started, you know, getting a little older and thinking and reading, I'm like, wait a minute, that's some of the stupidest shit ever. Because nobody's gonna listen to your words more than what they see you do. And that's anybody. That's just not your kids. You can tell anybody, hey, go do that. If they know you're not willing to do it, or they haven't seen you do it, what you talking about?
That we can take that down to colonization and slavery and religion. Mm-hmm. Slaves obey your master. So we're supposed to pray to the same God, but you're allowed to treat me this way, mm-hmm. right? But I got to be subservient to you. Is that not the same thing in our parenting that we're seeing in modern day parenting, right? Yep. I'm supposed to respect you. You can disrespect me. I'm supposed to follow your moral instruction, but it can't surpass me being able to mistreat you. That's not okay. Mm-hmm. And that is why a lot of children are angry at their parents. And so we have to clean up. We got to own our shit. We got to recognize, hey, this might not be all our fault. Some of us didn't know. We didn't learn. Some of it's generational trauma. And even if we didn't cause that trauma, it's our responsibility to heal it. If we actually care about our children, we need to first heal ourselves and begin that journey.
I love these type of conversations, and we need to continue having them, because it's way harder than it sounds, you know, like getting to that other side of who you're supposed to be as an adult. It's difficult because it's so much stuff in your way. So that's why I enjoy what you do, sister, and what you do for our community, because unpacking these things to give people like a clear pathway to where they need to be in their life is so important. Yeah. So everybody, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Melanated Convo Podcast. Man, good conversation. System, I have to have you back on. So everybody, please hit the like button, subscribe. I forgot to mention that earlier. Like button, subscribe. You can find the show on all of the digital platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all these different places. I'm your brother Harrison. You can find me on Instagram at MelanatedConvo100. Sister, where can they get in touch with you, and where can they buy that book?
So it's really simple. MissMariana.today, MARIANNA.today, because I am me 365 days of the year. You can go there to get your copy of Own Your Shit. I encourage you to get one for yourself and give one to a loved one. You know, sometimes we see people in pain and they don't want to listen to us. A great way to do it is, look, I got this for me. I got one for you too, so that they don't think you're picking on them. And from there, you can also book your consultation if you want to book me for a keynote, a workshop, a training facilitation for your organization, your foundation, your corporation. And then also you can go there and, you know, tap into my social media. And I don't like to say follow me. I don't need followers because they come and go, but I do appreciate appreciators. So if you appreciate the work, feel free to share it. It is definitely, I've been told that it has helped people in, you know, life or death situations. So I give thanks definitely. For this platform, and thank you for doing the work that you do.
No worries. Everybody, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Melanated Convo Podcast, family. We out. Peace.